Irish Radio.
Bahrainis take to the streets to denounce the opening of the Israeli embassy in Manama and the normalization of ties between the Persian Gulf Kingdom and Israel. Taiwan expresses concern about what it calls Chinese military activities over its airspace and warns Beijing's actions risk regional peace and stability. And Asian stock markets fall to near one-year lows, extending a global slump as soaring oil prices put further upward pressure on inflation. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Bahrainis have taken to the streets for the fifth straight night to denounce the opening of the Israeli embassy in Manama. Demonstrators gathered outside of the newly opened Israeli embassy. They chanted slogans to slam its opening. No incident was reported during the demonstration. Previous protests turned violent as Bahraini security forces attacked the demonstrators to disperse them. Israel opened its embassy in Manama last Thursday during a visit by the Foreign Minister Yair Lapid. Bahrain is one of the four Arab states that normalized ties with Israel last year under a U.S. brokered deal. Bahrain's main opposition group, the Al-Wafaq, and top cleric Sheikh Isa Al-Assem have condemned the normalization. Palestinians have called it a stab in their back. Iran has reiterated its readiness to return to talks for reviving the 2015 nuclear deal, but says that it first needs to review the minutes of the previous negotiations. Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh says the talks in Vienna could restart by early November. Khatibzadeh, however, says that the stumbling block is the removal of 800 sanctions that the U.S. imposed after it left the accord in 2018. A senior U.S. official has said that Washington hopes for the resumption of the stalled discussions in a short period of time, but the unnamed official has added the path for the negotiations will not remain open. Iran and the remaining signatories have held six rounds of talks in the Austrian capital since April to restore the troubled pact. Journalist and political analyst Brian Berletek says if the U.S. removes its sanctions, Iran will resume full compliance with the nuclear deal.
This goes all the way back to the Trump administration when the United States walked away from the agreement. Iran was upholding its side of the deal. The U.S. walked away in bad faith, and now with a new administration, they're saying that they're interested in possibly restarting these talks, but they're not admitting their mistake in leaving the talks without reason and penalizing Iran with these sanctions. And the first thing that they should do is come back to the table, take down the sanctions, and then go from there. And I'm sure that Iran would be more than interested and willing to go back to the deal. It benefits Iran.
Syria has praised Iran and Russia for the role that they played in the Arab country's victory over foreign-backed terrorism. In an interview with the Lebanese television network, Syria's Deputy Foreign Minister Ayman Susan called the two countries partners. He said both Tehran and Moscow helped Damascus foil a huge plot hatched by the U.S. to advance Israel's interests. He also hailed the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah for supporting the Syrian army in its fight against terrorists. Susan said the Arab nation is about to achieve the final victory in the war imposed over 10 years ago. Political commentator Ken Stone says that Syria's enemies underestimated the country's resolve and resistance against foreign aggressors.
The United States was trying to destroy the country of Syria in a regime change operation along with a coalition of its criminal partners in NATO among the Arab monarchs with Turkey and with Israel's help. And despite all of that, they were unsuccessful because they completely underestimated the resistance of the Syrian people to the destruction of their country, the resilience of the Syrian government even when it was under severe attack, and the loyalty, the tremendous loyalty of the president of Syria to the best interests of his country. The U.S. and its coalition of criminal partners completely underestimated the fact that Syria had allies, very steadfast allies in Russia, in Iran, in Hezbollah, in China. And these allies backed Syria to the hilt at the UN, in international meetings, and on the ground in Syria, and of course in the air in Syria as well.
An Iranian plane carrying humanitarian aid has landed in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. The shipment contains food and hygiene items that were delivered by the Iranian Red Crescent to Afghan officials. That is the fifth batch of aid that Iran has sent to its eastern neighbor in recent weeks. The help comes amid UN warnings of a looming humanitarian catastrophe in Afghanistan in the wake of the Taliban takeover of the country. Amit Nalami is our correspondent who joins us from Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. Well, the plane has landed as far as we know. Tell us about how that is going, and of course then comes the distribution of this aid.
Well, Carla, Afghanistan is currently grappling with a widespread economic crisis. There are widespread joblessness and poverty is pressing the people of Afghanistan, especially ordinary people. And landing of Iranian aircraft that has brought 50 tons of humanitarian aids to the people of Afghanistan has created hope and optimism among these people, because they believe that along with the arrival of Iran's humanitarian aids to the to Afghanistan's Kabul International Airport, some of other countries have also sent humanitarian aids to Afghanistan, including Qatar and Pakistan. But let's not forget that this is the fifth Iranian aircraft that lands here in Kabul International Airport and delivers humanitarian aid, especially food and medicine to the people of Afghanistan. The representatives of both Afghan Red Crescent Society as well as the representative of Iranian embassy both were present during the landing of this aircraft today here in Kabul International Airport. The representative of Afghan side welcomed the move of Iran and said that we are expecting that countries such Iran keep continuing supporting Afghanistan and the people of this country who have almost lost everything, and they are not sure about the fate of their country and the fate of their lives. However, 100 tons of other Iranian humanitarian aid had already arrived to the western city of Herat via Islam Qala customs in western Afghanistan. In the meantime, Taliban officials, some international humanitarian aid agencies who are still working inside Afghanistan, and the councils related to the people of Afghanistan are also widely welcoming the move of some international, regional countries and the neighboring countries of Afghanistan when it comes to sending humanitarian aids to this country. But in the meantime, they are calling on the Taliban to urgently pick some strict steps and do better attempts in order to bring an economic stability to this country. For instance, the first and the most important demand of the people of Afghanistan, especially the residents of big cities like Kabul, is that they need the reopening of banks, especially Afghanistan's central bank. Despite most of banks are currently are functioning and they are operational, but the customers and the people of Kabul and the rest of big cities, including Mazar-i-Sharif in north, Kandahar in the south, Herat in the west, believe that they are facing with numerous challenges when they go to banks to get money. One of those challenges is that banks have no end of cash to hand it over to the people, to their customers. In such circumstances, many, especially the economic analysts, believe that the time has arrived when the international community must pay a real attention to the people of Afghanistan and to the situation that is ongoing in this country. Otherwise, they believe that this country and this war-weary people will once again experience another widespread crisis.
Thank you very much for that. Amin Alami there, a correspondent from Kabul. Many thanks. Moving on, Taiwan has criticized China for what it called over-the-top military activities over Taiwanese airspace.
Taiwan definitely needs to be on alert. China is increasingly over the top. The world has also seen China's repeated violations of regional peace and pressure on Taiwan. So democratic countries have repeatedly issued warnings that their countrymen have to be self-reliant. We have also seen President Tsai ceaselessly supporting the national army. We must come together as one and strengthen ourselves. Only then will countries that want to annex Taiwan not dare to easily resort to force.
The Taiwanese premier said the region does not seek military confrontation, but he added that Taiwan will do whatever it takes to defend itself if its democracy is threatened. The self-ruled island says that dozens of Chinese aircraft have flown over its airspace since Friday. China considers the island as its own territory and is opposed to Taiwan seeking independence. China is also opposed to the military support that Taiwan receives from the U.S. Beijing says that Washington is threatening regional peace and stability. Political commentator Andrew Loing says the U.S. is doing all that it can to further push Taiwan into secession from China.
President Biden and all his predecessors have emphasized the confirmation that the United States respects its one-China policy, but on the other hand, the U.S. is trying to push the envelope as far as possible, trying all kinds of tactics and measures to push Taiwan forward as if it was a separate country without declaring its former status as a separate country. So it's a very dangerous path, trying, for example, enabling Taiwan to join international organizations, which are only allowed country members or quasi international organizations, like the WHO on various others, and also fielding high-level officials to visit Taiwan as if it was a separate country.
Asian stock markets suffer heavy losses and plunge into multi-month lows following a broad sell-off on Wall Street. Japan's stocks were down 2.8%. MSCI's broadest index of Asia-Pacific shares dropped 1.3% also. It reached 619.87, the lowest since November 2020. The drops come as investors get frantic about the impact of the soaring oil prices and supply chain disruptions. Oil prices have jumped to the highest level since November 2014. That happened after OPEC member states and their allies decided to hold to their planned output increase. India has reported more than 18,300 new COVID infections in the past 24 hours. That is the country's lowest daily caseload since May. Health authorities also reported 263 new daily deaths. Total COVID fatalities in India now top 449,000. Its total infections are above 33.8 million. The country was hit by surge in the disease in April and in May. That saw infections reach over 414,000 and deaths above 4,500 a day. The surge was blamed on people's reluctance to wear masks and underfunded medical infrastructure. India tackled the crisis by launching a mass vaccination campaign. The European Union is preparing steps to mount pressure on Britain to make it abide by the deals that London signed after leaving the bloc. French European Affairs Minister Clement Beaune says that measures will be announced within days. He has not specified those measures, but says they aim to defend the interests of the European states. Boone pointed to Britain's recent fuel crisis, implying that one measure could be related to the UK's dependence on European energy supplies. The EU and Britain have been working on trade deals since London left the bloc in February 2020. But many issues remain unresolved, as the UK is pushing to secure its demands. French President Emmanuel Macron has called for dialogue with Algeria to resolve a political and diplomatic row. Macron says that he wants tensions between Paris and Algiers to be eased via talks. Relations have turned sour since last week when France announced plans to sharply reduce the number of visas granted to Algerian nationals. Things became worse after remarks attributed to Macron about Algeria's modern history. The French president reportedly said Algeria has been ruled by a political military system that has totally rewritten its history. Developments prompted Algeria to recall its ambassador to Paris and to close its airspace to French military planes. The Italian court has suspended Spain's extradition request for Catalan separatist leader Carles Puigdemont. The politician was briefly arrested last month by the Italian authorities on a Spanish extradition warrant. Max Civelli has more from Rome.
A Sassari appeals court suspended a hearing regarding the extradition to Spain of former Catalan separatist leader Carles Puigdemont. The Italian judges have determined that a rule on the matter will be made after the European Court of Justice announces its verdict on Puigdemont's immunity. The politician's immunity, linked to his election as a member of the European Parliament, was lifted earlier this year by the EU General Court.
Catalan separatist leader Puigdemont is wanted by Madrid on charges of sedition for leading a Catalan bid to declare independence from Spain in October 2017. Separatists' short-lived declaration of independence triggered a major political crisis with Spain, during which Puigdemont and several others fled abroad.
A German court refused to extradite Puigdemont to Spain on rebellion charges in 2018, simply arguing that the Catalan leader was not punishable under German law. Some Italian lawmakers have slammed Puigdemont's arrest in Sardinia last month, saying it was a dark page in Italy's democracy.
The arrest of a politician whose only wrongdoing, in inverted commas, was organizing democratic elections is a worrying signal. If this is how we deal with forces that gather the support of millions of people against central governments, we should all be worried.
The Sassari court will set a new date after the European Court of Justice decides on the immunity of Puigdemont and on the legitimacy of the Spanish judge to issue the arrest warrant. Meanwhile, Puigdemont is free to travel as he pleases. For the time being, Max Civelli, Rome.
The European Commission president says that Brussels needs to do more to combat tax evasion. This follows revelations about offshore assets of dozens of world leaders and politicians.
Tax evasion and aggressive tax planning is completely unacceptable. And we have in the European Union some of the highest tax transparency standards in the world. But as we see, it's not enough. More work is needed. And that's why we will come forward with a proposal on the misuse of shell companies for tax purposes. And this will be done till the end of the year.
Ursula von der Leyen was responding to reporters' questions regarding the so-called Pandora Papers. The documents detail how dozens of current and former world leaders and public officials have used offshore tax havens to stash assets worth hundreds of millions of dollars. The allegations made in the papers range from corruption to money laundering and tax avoidance. That's all the time we have for this edition of World News. So bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
simple question.
London, a city hungry for power and energy. But Britain is sailing into an energy crisis, and no one seems to know quite how to fix it, as gas shortages force the energy sector into a massive commercial readjustment. Industry insiders have warned that countries all over Europe will be unable to escape this growing crisis in heat and power generation.
European wholesale gas costs have climbed sharply. However, the UK has been especially hard hit, with rises of over 250% in wholesale gas costs since January 2021, after a cold winter cut gas reserves and increased prices. Raising the pressure still further on the current situation, higher demand for liquefied natural gas in Asia, which also experienced particularly cold weather, has made matters worse. To add to this perfect storm, the US, Russia, and the North Sea gas fields were all associated with substantial supply reductions. The impact has been serious and swift. The UK's biggest CO2 producer stopped production at its Teesside and Cheshire fertilizer plants due to high natural gas prices, leading to a carbon dioxide shortage. That's a byproduct of fertilizer production and a vital component for food and other sectors. Consequently, the British Poultry Council announced a slowing in the supply chain. At the same time, energy suppliers are no longer able to cover the costs of wholesale gas due to price capping, and this is leading to energy company collapses. The UK's sixth largest energy company, Bulb, is in deep trouble and may have already gone bust by the time you use this programme. And all the while, British residents fear energy prices will add to the economic problems they're already facing through COVID-19.
Has the United Kingdom's departure from the European Union helped or hindered its ability to manage the shortage of gas and the surge in prices? And how will this massive jump in energy costs affect the average household? Simple questions with important answers. And let's begin with this fundamental question about how the public feels in regard to the collapse in the energy sector in the UK. We put that to the public. Here's their reaction in their own words.
They do. And if it's not being profitable for them, then they take appropriate action. Or the administrators do, I suppose.
It's a symbol of capitalism and the failure of a regulated market. And all the gas that comes out of the gas pipes is the same, as far as I can tell, so the market makes no sense.
Well, I have a daughter living here who's obviously very worried. It's getting very expensive. Also a friend who's a widow that lost her energy company and has been given the most expensive one now. And who knows what's going to happen next?
Like a lot of other things in this country compared with lots of other places, we tend to be taking a dip in so many aspects of our daily lives. And how we're going to get through it, I do not know.
I think, like, in times of crisis, even like what we think of as first world countries having like supply issues can be excused. I think it's how we react to that and like the management of that issue onwards from this point that will determine whether or not it's been like successful. Yeah, I think in times of crisis, it's you know, understandable that these things would happen. But yeah, it's the response and the management of that issue that will determine everything.
I'm sort of impartial to it, but I do feel sorry for those people who are really struggling.
I think that would be very bad for the economy, and I would wonder like why they aren't on top of it. Like, why is this happening? And yeah, I don't think there would be enough energy to like run. I don't know, things that require it, so.
What does it mean for a household if there is a huge hike in gas prices? Here's what we found out from the public.
More choices, so they have to basically greater opportunity cost between running the household.
How are people going to live then? Because then not people, they're not going to be able to make food,
turn on the, you know, just do like their daily stuff, live their life and stuff, go work and stuff. It's just not going to happen.
Not really. Hopefully not, because technology is moving forward the way things are going. So hopefully in the next maybe 5, 10, even 20 years, we get solutions to these problems.
I don't know the statistics of it, but obviously it's a natural gas that's being found underground, and certain countries are getting more of it than others, yeah. So I'm not really sure if that's the only energy that we can use. As we were saying before, maybe we could look at coal or other forms of energy that have been scrapped as more efficient ways of doing.
Well, I'd have thought the government would support those people or do something so they get a cheaper energy price. But also it's about reducing the energy we need, not just keeping the same as we are and the price is going up. So it should be balancing by the less energy we use and obviously the less we pay for it in total. So, yeah.
Well, I think people will obviously look at their weekly, monthly, daily budgets and maybe assess, you know, can I afford the next or quarter bill coming up, my next monthly bills, what's my outgoings going to be like, and, you know, really, you know, sort of assess if they can afford things on a day-to-day. And obviously coming into winter when you're going to be assessing, can I put the heating on, can I not put the heating on, it's going to be, you know, quite tough on low-income families.
Yes, they're going to have to make some arrangements, and some things are going to have to go. Other things, well, it's really just a matter of people adjusting to the circumstances they find themselves in. I'm not sure that really the government should be bailing people out over this. What else can I say about it?
Well, I've travelled all over the world and I have seen what happens. There are things called rolling brownouts, so that you only have energy during certain hours of the day. If you can't afford it, you can't afford it. And I think if you're on a fixed income, it's exceedingly difficult, not just students.
And well, what's happening to their social benefits? That's going to be cut. Their wages are going to be lowered because of the tax on national health. And it goes on and on. We're going back to the 1930s, I believe. And it's down to one set of governments. How that will change in the next 3 years, I do not know. And I don't think it's very hopeful for a lot of people, never mind just the ones who are on low income or no income at all. So I can only hope that people realise what is happening to them and attempt to make a change.
Yeah, I mean, these things tend to hit the working classes, like, worse. Like, we know that is true of pretty much every crisis. We've seen that throughout the COVID crisis. These hit the working class families the hardest. And again, yeah, it's how the government responds to that. Is it going to be subsidised in some way? Are we gonna pay for it with taxes? Like, how are we going to respond to that? But, I mean, it's no shock that it's going to hit the working classes hardest. Like, that's absolutely no shock.
I think the government needs to look at some sort of subsidies. And I think the other big worry for me personally is what this is going to do for the environment, because all the investment that's going into renewables, I think, will now be put on hold.
Well, it's something seemingly needs to be done. Keeping the lights on, as I say, needs to be pretty low down, in the sense of this is a foundational thing. We need to pay those kinds of bills before we pay other bills. So it's a shame if people would need to be making cuts to other things to have to pay that, rather than being able to pay that first, or pay the mortgage, pay the rent, and then pay those kinds of bills. I don't know how to make it work.
I guess they're going to struggle even more. So if people are going to have to rely more on food banks and things like that, it's just going to make everything tighter, isn't it? Especially with winter coming.
I don't think that those households will do very well, and they won't be able to afford the electricity that they need. And so they'll probably lose their houses or just have to switch to like different energy sources.
Given these problems, would the public here in London be willing to support better relations between the UK and Russia if that meant that the world's biggest exporter of gas could help us out of this situation?
I feel that actually somehow Russia's on its back legs and it'll be forced to crack in the current environment. It is in the next 5 to 10 years, but I feel that the Europeans definitely feel that they want a better relationship.
I mean, if they don't cause us any problems, then why not? But if there's going to be problems, then nah, don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to be buying butane and paraffin lamps, and they're going to be wearing jerseys and huddling together like in old days in one room rather than hanging around in all the rooms of the house. So obviously these are really serious problems. When I was little, I was born in Russia, they had central heating for all the buildings, and it's necessary because it's very cold outside, but central heating somehow was much more controlled by the government there, and I think now it's privatized, but it's still based on an older system where it was mandatory that all houses had heating all winter. So yeah,
but having a talk, there's nothing wrong in having a talk, of course, but of course I don't know the political situation between UK and Russia, so yeah.
Well, better relations in terms of for the sake of having good relations with, you know, powerful countries, but not in terms of their energy supply, no.
I think we need to be moving away from gas is the other thing. So the government haven't done enough on insulation, on shifting to green energy. It's really hard, but they've done nothing as far as I can see for years, particularly around how people heat their homes. It's, yeah, there'd be no change, has there?
Well, I know that America was energy independent a year or so ago. Yes, who wants to be beholden to the Russians? But there you go.
While Putin's in charge, the government of Russia is not a place, not an outfit to be trusted, either in so many social aspects. I wouldn't trust them, no.
I think that the beginning of Have I Got News For You sums that up, where they just see Putin turning the pipe off. It's quite a dangerous predicament to be in.
Well, it is a shame that we aren't able to keep our energy companies owned in this country, and have, rather than being dependent on outside forces, whether they're wanting us to do well or not.
Consider the numbers. Around 22 million households have a gas main supply. Each one could see energy bills jump by £400 in a year. For comparison, what are called day-ahead energy prices already reached an average of €291 per megawatt hour. However, the maximum price for the UK has been estimated at €1,084 per megawatt hour. When the wholesale cost exceeds what firms can charge due to price capping, gas supply firms risk going out of business.
Brexit means the UK has to solve this crisis on its own, but it also means the UK doesn't have to worry about how other countries which are affected by the same problem are dealing with it. All things considered, does the public here in London think being outside the EU is a help or a hindrance in resolving this crisis?
I'm gonna lie, since we've left, everything's got kind of expensive. I'm struggling myself out here, so I think it would be better if we did stay inside. We would have had a bit more help, and yeah.
I think it's better to be at the room with more often than not, and be part of the decision making. So
I think Brexit is a waste of time, and it's made it much more difficult for people to travel. In my family, my family are musicians, and they're having to get special visas and get permissions to go around Europe and stay there for longer. I've had to go back after 90 days because of the 6-month 90 days limit. And so I've tried to stay in Europe as much as possible for work and research, but it is annoying, and it's just making travel much more difficult. So I can't wait for the days when all this ludicrous system is reconsidered. Yeah.
Actually, it depends on the problem. Yeah, it depends on the problem. It depends on the situation.
The way I see it is, if we're going to go renewable, obviously the wind might not blow in Britain one day, the sun might still shine in Spain. So we need a bigger kind of like grid, not just a national grid, but like a European grid, to kind of make sure that the renewable energy is coming from somewhere at some point.
Well, there's probably a long list of issues that we've had since leaving the EU, so I think we'll just add it to the list and try and resolve our problems, but hindsight's a great thing.
I really just don't know. I suppose if we were in the EU and we had the EU's clout, then that might be one thing, but...
I really don't know. I don't think so, actually. I think this country will make its own decisions and own arrangements, and as it's done so on many a previous occasion.
So, what do I know? But I would imagine it probably doesn't help, because I think states working together probably have more power to influence big oil companies and other states like Russia. So I would have thought it's, on balance, not helpful, but who knows? I think now it's become a hindrance. I didn't vote myself to remain, but the way it has all been mismanaged, then yes, I would certainly have second thoughts, and I think anybody else who voted the way I did ought to have second thoughts and hope that there will be a change in the not-too-distant future.
My feeling is it really depends what aspect you're looking at it. In terms of, like, maybe bureaucratic efficiency, it could be a little bit more efficient, and it could be more beneficial in terms of, like, getting things done. But in terms of, like, cooperation with other member states in the EU, probably wouldn't be a good thing. Honestly, in terms of that, I wouldn't be entirely sure. My hunch would be that it's probably a bad thing. In terms of losing cooperation, losing diplomatic ties with the other nations, maybe in terms of efficiency, it would be a bit easier getting things done.
These kinds of things generally are good to be able to cooperate with people, but I personally think being out of the EU is a good thing, and there's ways of cooperating without being tied in like that.
I think it can be a problem in some ways, like this, because we might rely on other countries for, like, aid and help. And it also makes things just a lot more complicated, because people can't travel as easily. I don't really think it's very beneficial for things like this.
A final question for the public. Could this crisis have been avoided, and is it a one-off, or could this be the first of many similar issues that will face Britain?
Well, for all kinds of reasons, there must be more coming. For, I don't know, supply shocks, radio problems, some unpredicted events. Yeah, I think they're going to keep coming. Yeah, I'm surprised that we don't have a strategic reserve. Yeah,
I think they're kind of using it to cloud other issues. And so they're confusing us with debates that might not be really what is the most important thing at the moment. Yeah.
I think internationally, like, they are trying to increase the energy output. So I think I expect energy crisis to reduce rather than increase in the future. Yeah.
There'll always, I think there will be crises, but I think it'll be the crisis that sparks us into moving quicker and puts money where it needs to be. So yeah.
I'm not an expert, but I can see more problems arising. Definitely. Just hope my fish and chips doesn't go, higher than £12, because things are getting scarce and price is definitely increasing.
I think energy is always going to be vulnerable to interference, economic circumstances. Saw it with the petrol crisis or the oil crisis years ago. It's a matter that's really just to be confronted here and now and deal with it and move on, and then if something else arises down the road, then the same sort of approach should be made to that.
Yes, I think so. I guess with other things like water, which were privatised, where it's the same water, it doesn't really make any sense, does it? I think the free market seems to be all very well while it works, and when it stops working, we all have to pay for it. So I think we need to rethink our whole approach to the way we provide basic services.
Well, I think if we're going to go green and people don't like fossil fuels, then you have to look at other clean energy, like nuclear energy. But everyone's panicked by the word nuclear. In fact, it's probably the way to go.
Of course we are. There's a whole load of trouble waiting behind us. And it needs some close attention, not just by government, but by people in general.
I think they're probably bound to say it's a one-off just to keep, like, the public calm, which is, I think, fair. Like, you don't want to create too much panic in the general population. We saw what happened with, like, panic buying at the start of COVID and stuff. So I think that's probably a sensible strategy. I would expect the media to, like, play it up a bit for clicks and for, like, stuff like that. Will it be the only crisis we have? Probably not. I mean, we're already seeing, like, the
the lorry drivers, there aren't many lorry drivers, so it's already not the only crisis we're having. Will there be more from here on? You'd think so. Like a crisis like this, to come out of it with only an energy shortage would be quite a lucky escape. I mean, if you look back to crises we've had in previous years, you tend to come out with a lot more damage than just an energy crisis. So, again, yeah, I think it's a sensible response from the government to keep people calm, but I would be extremely surprised if we got off with just this.
I think until we get the renewable thing, if you think we're an island, the tide comes in and out every day. It's windy in certain places. Yeah. It's sunny today. Why are we not capturing that?
I think this is probably the first of more problems because, I don't know, as civilization progresses and things become more technological and we're going to start to rely on, other countries and stuff for help. So, yes, I think this is the first of many problems.
Surging gas prices across the United Kingdom are turning into a full-blown crisis as the British government holds emergency talks while energy companies collapse one after another. Nobody seems able to stop this trend. There is now even growing talk of urgently reopening coal-fired power stations to generate energy and stop blackouts.
The British government is considering emergency state-backed loans to energy companies in a bid to encourage firms to take on customers. But with the prices out of control, the supply limited, and the country out of cash, when it comes to saving companies that were once profitable but now can't even afford to trade, it may already be too late. As the lights go off for energy companies, the worry is that the lights could start going off for Britain next.
We here at IRIB English Radio express our heartfelt condolences to all our listeners on the occasion of 28th of Safar, the anniversary of the passing away of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today is also the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hassan, peace be upon him, the second infallible successor to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Our heartfelt condolences to all our listeners on this day of mourning.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
Humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We said over and over that corruption has a direct impact on human rights, especially when it's done on a political level. So I want to finish up with the rest of the points I want to mention to the side effects of corruption on a political level. It will create, the corruption obviously, creates a sense of political hypocrisy as a direct result of buying political royalties. You can see that, I don't know why, but in many countries you have different parties trying to fight their way to power. And I would be happy and excited if they were doing this for the betterment of people or trying to serve people. But in fact, what they're doing is that they trying to do it as, you know, for themselves. Where, for example, in some countries, especially countries which the system is not too strong and the system is corrupted, you have people buying their way into power. You can buy a chair in the parliament, for example. Or you can buy yourself a position if you have the funds and the wealth for it, or you come from a wealthy family or a family that owns, for example, companies in the country. You could definitely buy your way in, and the person could not be qualified to be in such a position, but because he has the wealth, so he can buy himself in. So this kind of buying political royalty is a huge problem that will devastate society itself. If you look at the system, the government system is so corrupted that if you have money for earning $1 million or $2 million, you can buy yourself a position in government, or you can buy a post in government. It's easy as that, because there is corruption. And people who are, for example, the ruling party, they say, you know what, I can sell you things. You want to pay me, I can give it to you. If this is happening on a state level, what do you think will happen to people themselves? How would people would react? How people would feel towards such a system? Would there be trust? Would there be, a sense of honesty towards that system? Would they even feel safe in their own homes, in their own places, when they know that the people who are running the place are nothing but thieves who buy their way in and out? If a position can be bought, then what services would they give to them? So they buy themselves in, and then they start to take the rights of people again and again, and that keep repeating itself. So when we have corruption in this level, it will obviously it creates a sense of weakness when it comes to the individuals themselves, or to the various organizations and departments of that system itself. Because a department, for example, a minister of education couldn't be bought, a minister of health can be bought, and you name it, then how strong are these systems going to be? Because the person who's there, obviously, is not there out of love for the country. He's not there for the love of the citizens. He just wants to take power. He just wants to take control. And that's just as a result of political corruption, when they are buying and selling political royalty. So it is not an easy thing that we should, turn a blind eye to. And you will see that most of the countries who suffer on the political system is because of that loyalty and royalty being bought and sold. So that's something that we need to put our finger on. Let us take a short break, and then we will continue after, inshallah.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to For Humanity. Political corruption harms the reputation of the state or the country, and obviously it will reduce its access to aid or financial aid in general from other states or from the World Bank, as they call it, which negatively will affect the economy and social development plans. Some countries, for example, don't have too much resources. They don't have too much wealth that generates from the land itself, for example, gold, diamond, coal, oil, gas, natural resources they don't have. So these states, these countries, they end up borrowing money from the World Bank, for example, to rebuild or build infrastructure for their own country. But when the political system is so bad, so corrupted, it leaves that negative and bad reputation on that country, that when they go ask for money, they ask for help, they ask for aid, you see people or organizations or even the World Bank or United Nations or whoever they might be in charge, they say, well, sorry, we can see that you're in need, but we can't actually give it to you because your reputation is so bad when it comes to being trusted and doing the right thing, we can't actually give you anything. And then the people will suffer. So always goes back, whatever happens on the political level, the only people that will feel the pain are the citizens, is me and you. Our rights get taken. I mean, of no fault of our own, mind you. I'm living in a state. The state is corrupted. They left a bad impression on the world because they are corrupted. Thus, I don't get help. I don't get aid. I don't get schools. A lot of countries, for example, they still don't have water, for example. They, women and children and men, they have to walk kilometers to get to a river, to get to a well, so they could get some water, for example. A lot of kids, for example, walk kilometers just so they could get to a school, for example. And so on and so forth, because these countries are so poor and no one is offering them aid because whoever is in charge is being tyrannic and is being corrupted and just giving the country a bad name. So when this happens, when corruption happens on that political level, even the reputation itself harms people. Not the existence of it. Obviously, the existence of it is the main harm. But even its reputation harms people. I mean, and this is something in a common between us as people. Like, if I know a person is a liar or a cheater, and he comes asks me for a loan, I'm not going to give him. Based on what should I give him? He's a liar, he's a thief, he's a cheater, he's this and he's that. Why should I give him? I don't give him. And someone, well, what about his family? His family might starve. Well, yeah, I would love to help his family, but I know that man who's in charge will take that money that I give him. I don't know, maybe he goes and buys drugs with it. Or he goes and spends it on his own personal endeavors or his personal desires. I don't know. So it's just natural as human beings we don't do this. Imagine trying to borrow billions of dollars to create plans and infrastructure for a country when other countries have this bad image of you being corrupted, being a thief, being a cheater, and so on and so forth. Obviously, they're not going to give anything to these countries. If anything, they might drop a basket of food by airplane to those who are hungry and those who are starving. And as you can see, this it happens in a lot of countries in Africa and so on and so forth. So even the reputation itself, when corruption happens, harms people where they live. We'll leave it up to here and we will continue in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صل يا ربي على طه الأمين رحمة أرسلته للعالمين وعلى آل النبي أجمعين فبهم نرجوك أحسن ختمنا.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.